afternoon, and thank you for joining Hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who are busting through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we'll be. And that's what my shirt says. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better or more beautiful example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. Quick science lesson, the caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells, and just when it thinks its life is over, it reforms into the butterfly while it's in the cocoon. However, it's not finished struggling. It still has to fight in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly once it gets out of the cocoon. I think that is amazing, but I also think it can't be easy. But neither is busting through limits that society places upon us. My guest today, Gina, and I'm not even going to try to say her last name because I don't want to butcher it, is going to join us in just a second. And we're going to talk about inclusion and being part of the world through literacy. And I'm really excited to talk to her and see how she does that. But before we get there, as always, be sure to like and subscribe to this channel so you don't miss another amazing guest. And if you are watching here live, give us a hashtag live and where you're watching from. And if you're watching in the replay, give us a hashtag replay and where you're watching from. All right. So here we are ready to go. I'm going to bring Gina on. Hi, Gina. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you here. I'm really interested in hearing more about inclusion through literacy. I really think that is interesting. So we've got Fran joining us. So I just want to say, hey, Fran, she's joining us from Southern Illinois. Thanks for listening and following the directions about joining us live and telling us where you're from. So Gina, go ahead and tell us a little bit more about you and kind of what your life is like, what brought you here today.
I love the whole no limits. Growing up, my life hit a little bit of a turn when I turned 21 and I lost all hearing in my left ear.
Oh, wow.
And I was going into the film business, and it's a very rapid, fast-paced industry, and you have to not be a hinder to them, right? And me having only one ear, that's kind of a hinder because I ended up getting a job a week after I lost my hearing. So like, I didn't even give myself time to adjust. And granted, I still had one ear. The job that I was a story assistant. I was working on Dancing with the Stars. And one, like the celebrity was mic'd on one side and the dancer was mic'd on the other. And it was my job to hear what they were saying and log it down. So that way, when you see the package every Monday for show day, if it's still on Mondays,
then I think so. I honestly don't know either.
Yeah. That's what I helped put together. And those notes were very important. And it was very challenging because whoever was on that left ear, couldn't hear when they were speaking unless they were next to the other person, because then their mic would pick it up. And I struggled with that. And what I would do is I would go back afterwards and I would rewatch everything. And that took time. It was so time consuming. It was exhausting. But the thing is that I didn't want them to know about this disability. How can you even accommodate that? It's like, well, we need somebody that can hear. That's your job. Your job is to pick up what they're saying and write that down. And, you know, if you can't do that, well, you know, this position isn't for you. And it was my first job in the industry. So of course I didn't want to be a hinder. Of course I needed to, you know, show them that I could do it regardless of the limit. Right. And that's why I was really attracted to your podcast and your show, because I can relate in that aspect. And then I had a great film career and I still am in the film business. However, I also have a children's book. I'm a children's author. And I am a speaker. I speak to not only to just kids, but I do adult speaking. And then I transitioned to having a nonprofit. And that nonprofit is through my children's book. And it allows us to go to schools that don't do author visits and give those kids that impact. So that way, the book is all about belonging, you know, and how you can belong even if you don't fit in, right? And those of us with, well, quote unquote, limits, right, feel like they don't fit in already. They feel like they are different. And the thing is that we're all different. We're all unique. We're all special, right?
Yeah.
So it's understanding that it's not about fitting in. It's about belonging and knowing how you belong and knowing, you know, that you do belong in the world. And that's one of the things that I teach.
I love that. That is absolutely belonging, but you don't have to fit in. That's a really interesting way to phrase that. So I want to go back and talk a little bit. Was there any known reason that your hearing went away?
No.
You just woke up one day and you couldn't hear out of that ear anymore.
I was at Cheesecake Factory, actually, 7 p.m. at night. I was around 7:16, actually. See if we're getting specific. I was in California, Cheesecake Factory. I stood up, just finished dinner with some friends, stood up, pushed in my chair, and then boom, pop. There was a loud ringing in my ear, like it was tinnitus, you know, like you would leave a concert and suddenly your ear was ringing.
Right.
That's what it was like. And that's when I found out. Gone, lost hearing.
Wow. And you hadn't been, for example, to a concert or any loud environments or
just having dinner.
Wow. That is crazy. And you know, that is actually something that I don't talk about often when I am talking to guests is the fact that every one of us is 1 second away from having some sort of limitation put on us. And, and you are the perfect example of that. And so that's the other reason why I do this, because I want people to understand different doesn't mean bad. And that's a big part of it. I see, and as a special ed teacher, I saw so many of my students being treated as if they were less than because they saw me, the special education teacher, for whatever amount of time, for whatever reason. And it's almost arrogance, I feel, that people who don't have something that, you know, is labeled a disability, they don't seem a lot of times to have empathy or to even try to understand. And so having this knowledge, having the idea that you're just a breath away, and you could be someone who now has a limitation that you didn't have the second before.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, anything in life, you know, you have a challenge, you know, car accident, suddenly, you know, you have to relearn how to walk, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you're diagnosed with something and suddenly, you know, you're fighting for your life. You know, you don't know what's going to happen. You know, one day I pushed in my chair and there went my hearing, you know, it's just, and you have to be able to not play the victim and become the victor of that. You know, I told myself when I lost my hearing, I gave myself a weekend to grieve. So I flew home on Friday. I think I found out about it on Thursday. Friday, I flew home and I said, you have this weekend to play the victim. You have this weekend to grieve and cry. When Monday comes, we are in victor mode and we're going to fight to get it back. And that's what I did. And I gave myself the weekend, let myself process, grieve, understand what was going on. And then Monday I was, you know, fighting for getting my hearing back. You know, it was a lot of steroids I was taking and then none of that worked well for a week. And then that didn't work. And then I did like hot yoga. I did like a bunch of stuff. I did anything I saw. I saw in the Penny Saver, hot yoga helps with hearing impairment. And I took hot yoga. I was like, I hated every second of it, but I was like, this is what's going to help. I did so many different things. And then 10 years later, I ended up regaining like 80% of it back, but it took a 10-year journey. But the thing is that I didn't say, woe is me. I just was like, yes, I had those down moments. Like not every moment was victor. Like I remember being at the Apple store. It was March. Now, I just lost my hearing January 28th, March. In like the first week in February, I found out I'm deaf. By March, I am back in California and I am at the Apple store with a friend and I am on the computer just playing, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the workers at the store is like on my left side, but where I couldn't see him. He's not my peripheral vision.
Uh-huh.
And he is saying stuff to me. I don't know what he's saying. I still don't know what he's saying, but I guess, you know, ma'am, can I help you is what I can assume he was saying.
Sure.
And at some point he walked away and my friend walked over to me because he was the one that was it. He needed help in the store. So he was getting the help he needed, but he oversaw what just happened. Mm-hmm. And he came out to me as they went to go and help him. And he goes, why are we so rude to that guy? I was like, what are you talking about? He goes, the guy was trying to talk to you. He kept trying to talk to you, ask if you need help. And then you weren't acknowledging him. And I like cried right then and there. And I was just like, I'm deaf. You know, like it really hit me. And then it did. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then I, you know, and had moments like that where, you know, it was like, oh my goodness, here it is. But, you know, then it was like, okay, now how am I gonna fix it next time? You know, like, am I gonna pay more attention and look around? You know, what are the things that I might have to do a little bit extra than Gina? Gina before my hearing may have to do a little bit extra of the Gina after my hearing loss, right? That's okay. Like, that's okay. That's just the reality of it. We're not gonna, you know, not understand the reality. The reality is I can't hear in my left ear, right?
Right.
And so how am I gonna be more cognizant of that? How am I gonna allow people to know about it? You know, when I am at an airport and I, you know, sometimes I used to only have like one earphone in because why mm-hmm. do I need two, right? Only one.
Sure.
And then people would think that was because then they could come and talk to me because they could hear me and I wouldn't know that. And that's when, okay, I'd be cognizant, either put another one in just to put it in there, right? So mm-hmm. people don't, or be more under, let everyone know, hey, I have a hearing problem, you know, like speak up. And that's another thing. People with limitations sometimes, and I only say this because I was at a speaking event with speaking, and a lot of the people with limits were like, I don't want to speak up. I don't want to let them know I need some extra help. I don't want to let them know that I have a limit, you know? And I understand that because I felt that way when I was working on Dancing with the Stars. I didn't want them to know. And any job interview I had, I'm not mentioning it. Why would I mention it? Because you're going to all of a sudden judge me on my limits. And you're going to be like, well, yes, she can't hear. She's not going to be able to do that, right? So then you're not going to want me. And the thing is like, well, you got the Disability Act. No, it doesn't, you know, judgment is judgment. You know, people are going to, and you can't prove that. So I always wanted to make sure that I could be the victor, that I could, you know, speak up for myself. And also I can still do the job, even if it took me twice as long or, you know, anything like that.
Yeah. And Fran has a question, and I think you've kind of covered it, but just in case there's a specific piece that you do that you haven't mentioned, she asks, how do you go from victim moments to victor moments?
You recognize that you're in a victim moment. First of all, the first thing is you got to realize that you're in that victor moment. You have to have that self-awareness, that self-observation, and say, oh my gosh, I'm playing the victim card right now. And then you have to stop, take a breath, and go, okay, how can I be the victor in this moment? Like, what can I do, right? I can't change the reality of it, right? Reality is right now I have no hearing. So what can I do, you know, to not be woe is me? And then you take those steps. But the first thing you have to do is recognize it. You have to realize that, oh, I'm in a victim mode right now, you know? And that victim mode is, you know, the pity mode, the self-pity. And it's okay to be in those moments. I'm not saying don't be in those moments, but recognize those moments. You know, like I gave myself those moments. I remember, and you can do this in any aspect. You don't need to have a limit. You know, I was working in a restaurant at one point in my life, miserable, hated every second of it. And I said, Gina, you have 2 minutes before you come into the job. And I would set my timer. I would sit in my car. I would set my timer for 2 minutes. And I said, you can play victim mode for 2 minutes. And I would cry and be so upset that I was working at this restaurant that I absolutely despised. And then 2 minutes, the timer went off and I would wipe my tears and I would walk into that restaurant I would high five everybody and I'd be like, are you guys ready for a great shift? And I'd go around and I'd say hello to everyone. And I was everyone's biggest cheerleader and I'd have a smile on my face. No one had any idea that 2 minutes ago I was in my car crying, giving myself a pity party. It's because I recognized, I allowed myself that victim mode. I recognize it and I moved into victor mode and that allowed me to get my energy up. It allowed me to stay positive, allowed me to be a positive impact around me. Everyone wanted to work with me. Everyone was like, when they saw my name on the shift, they knew it was going to be a good work experience because I brought that. I brought that energy. I didn't bring the victim mentality. I didn't bring the, oh, I can't believe I'm here mentality. It's like, you know, I brought the whole, this is my life right now. That is okay. And I'm going to make the most of it. And it was the same thing with my hearing. You know, that was just that. Those are some ways that you can step out of victim mode and go into victor mode.
I love that. I love that it doesn't just apply to one situation. You can apply it in life everywhere. I'm probably going to use that example in some of my in some of my professional development that I do, or some of my speaking engagements. That you know, understanding behaviors is the session that I'm thinking of specifically, because you can take control. And a lot of times I feel like many people don't believe they have control. Mm-hmm. You know, that this happened to them, now they have to deal with it. Or, you know, like you said, the work situation, well, this is my plight. This is just the job I have. There's nothing else I can do, you know, and they do, they just, it's all externally happening and they don't look at, there are some things that I can control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the thing is, like, the restaurant wasn't forever. It was an ends to a means at the moment, you know, and it served me. Right. But if I would have, and the thing was, is that most of the people there did not want to be there and they let you know that. And the thing is that you're now around that and it's so easy to let them know that too. Yeah. I don't like being here. And and the moment you do that, you get sucked into the negative trap. I lie to myself all the time. Okay. It doesn't mean that I believe me, but I do my best to believe it, because I would go to the restaurant and be like, yeah, but hey, we're making money, guys. We're making a lot of money. This is so great. And we get to do this. And in my mind, it's like, well, it sucks. Just like they know it sucks. Right. But I wouldn't say that out loud. I think you have there's a big power in what you're speaking. And the thing is that you are not your thoughts. You are the observation of your thoughts. Right. So I observe my thoughts on what it's saying, but what comes out of my mouth is what I am in control of. Right.
Right.
And it's that positive. I only want positivity coming out of this mouth. That's it. Or if there is negativity, I need to be able to catch it. And the key to all that is being self-aware.
Yes. So true. Self-awareness is huge. And I'm really surprised that most people don't have that. I just, because I've seemed to have had it most of my life, if not all of my life, I just thought everybody had it. And I just found out a couple of years ago that I'm pretty unique in how self-aware I am.
Yeah. And
so that's kind of why I started doing some of the professional development that I offer, because I was like, oh, okay, well, yeah, I guess I should talk to people about this because I understand. And so Fran says, that's good. Thank you. And then she also says, your words become your truth. And I very much agree with her in that. And I also want to let you know how much I appreciate that you acknowledge your feelings. You don't try to squelch them. You didn't try to say, you know, that's not important. You shouldn't feel that way, whatever. But you allow yourself to acknowledge and validate your own feelings. And again, I feel like that's an area that many people don't do. Oh, I shouldn't be worried about this. Oh, I shouldn't feel this way. Oh, whatever it is. And then they just try to, you know, they diminish themselves or they diminish other people's feelings. Well, you don't have any worry to be nervous. You don't have any reason to be anxious. You don't have any reason to be sad or depressed, or, you know, you shouldn't feel sorry for yourself. Look at this person and that person or whatever. And I think we would go so much further in life if we just said, you know what, your feelings are valid. Yeah, I probably would feel that way too. Now, you know, how do we move on? Like you said, you
that's
know,
that's the key. That's the key, because what you're saying right now, people are going to be listening to, and then they stay in that victim mode. It's like, you know what? It's not that I don't get sad. is that I acknowledge that sadness and go, I don't want to feel this way. I'd rather be happy. And then I'll put a smile on my face. And the thing is like, you can't be upset when you're laughing or smiling. It just doesn't work. Right. And those are some of the things that I do for myself in terms of, I acknowledge where I'm at. Like the other day I was like, just in a bad mood. I was irritable. And I don't know why. I have no idea. I was just really irritable. So I had to remove myself from being around people for a hot second, you know, until I was able to get unirritable. And you have to, and the thing with self-awareness and the reason why we need to be self-aware, and for those wondering, how do I become self-aware? Journaling is one of the best things that you can do to really become self-aware, because you can acknowledge you in that situation. You can acknowledge what you were thinking in that situation. You can acknowledge your feelings in that situation. You can acknowledge how you reacted, because when you're journaling, you got to see yourself from an outside viewpoint. You can't be, you know, and it's really hard for us to see it when we're in the thick of it. So when we're at the end of the day or the beginning of the next day or whatever it is, that time of the day that we have for journaling, we're going to revisit that. It's going to play in our head like a movie, and you're going to be able to observe yourself in that standpoint. And for when you start to acknowledge and observe yourself, you get to know yourself a lot better, a lot better. And then you're able to, you can't change what you don't see, you know? So people don't change because they can't see themselves. Like, that's one of the reasons why people don't change. And when you start to see yourself, then you can decide on if you like this or you don't like it. Like, I just recently realized about myself. Now, I knew this for a while, known this for a while, but thought I got over this, but I didn't get over it. Mm-hmm. I love control. I'm running a nonprofit right now, and I have to be able to give up that control to my board, have to be able to give that control up to the steering committee. And I have a really hard time with that because this is what I founded. I founded this. I'm in founder brain, and I have to move out of founder brain into executive director brain. And executive director brain needs to let go of control. Needs to not be so emotionally attached to the work. And I am recognizing that, number one. And when things pop up in my life, I then go, okay, am I trying to control the situation? Am I, you know, and those are some ways that we can be observing ourselves and recognizing it and then shifting out of it. Like, if you don't want to be sad, recognize, okay, I'm sad. Well, how can I get out of it? Right? Cleaning for 5 minutes opens up your prefrontal cortex, right? Puts you in a good mood. Like going outside, going for a walk, going to the gym. These things are journaling. They help you. You sitting down looking social media gives you a very short dopamine hit, okay? Very short. So you have to do things that are going to open up your prefrontal cortex and move you out of that mode. And it's just, again, knowing yourself. Like, I know me. Like, I know myself when I... like on how to shift out of sadness. I know myself, like, and one of the best things for me is setting that timer, giving myself those 2 minutes and then moving on, right? I know me when I'm in anger mode. Like, I know how to get out of that, right? So it's just recognizing yourself, observing yourself, and then getting out of it, because yes, feel those feelings, but do not stay in those feelings if they're negative. Like, allow yourself to move out of those feelings, because that's the only way you're going to grow. And you're going to be able to move into victor mode. Victors don't stay. They don't ever not feel those emotions, but they know themselves to move out of those emotions.
Yeah. And all of what we're talking about, I think, lends into being belonging, being included. Because people don't tend to want to stay around people who are negative all the time. Occasionally, you know, you want somebody to commiserate with you. But to always be negative, you know, and part of, I think, belonging is being able to recognize our strengths and our own weaknesses. And then, you know, working those together, acknowledging other people's. So that's my opinion. What do you feel about how what we've talked about can blend into belonging in a situation?
So one of the big things that I teach when I do speaking events, especially in children, is I ask them how many of them have played a sport before. And then I ask how many of you guys have worn the wrong jersey. And I said, you didn't fit in that day. Everyone could point you out. You don't have the right jersey. You stand out instantly. That didn't mean you don't belong to the team, right? You still belong.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And that's the difference between belonging and fitting in, is that fitting in is changing yourself. And the thing is that you're never going to fully fit in with everybody, because let's just go on. We in society go right to looks right away. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't fit in because of the way they look, right?
Yep.
Or the way they dress, right? But what we also don't think about is skill sets, right? Maybe they aren't on your skill level, right? And they don't fit in on the soccer field. You could point out the best player some of the times, so depending on the team, you know, you could point out the good one, you could point out the not so good one, right? Maybe they think differently than you. Maybe you guys all have one belief, and maybe that one person doesn't have the same beliefs as you, right? Mm-hmm. These are all ways that we don't fit in, right? But that doesn't mean that we don't belong. It just means that we don't fit in, right? And fitting in means I got to change myself. I got to change my beliefs to fit in with these guys. I got to change the way I dress to fit in with these guys. I got to change the way that I look. I got to get better. I'm going to quit the team because I'm not as good as everybody else, right? I don't fit in. And instead, embracing where you're at, okay? Embracing what you look like, embracing your style, embracing the way you think, right? Embracing your skill level, right? And knowing that I belong anyway. And belonging is showing up as your authentic self, knowing that you're enough. It means that I belong here and I belong with this group, but I could also stand alone. And that's the whole point of belonging, right? Where fitting in means I have to change myself to be like everybody else, or look like everybody, think like everybody else, be on the same level as everybody else. And that, unfortunately, is what we teach in society. And then it erodes kids' self-esteem, because as they move up and they grow and stuff like that, they think they don't fit in, they don't belong, and they run away, just because, of course, they're not going to fit in when they're first starting out in softball and at 10 years old, when kids have been doing it since they were five. Of course, they're not going to fit in when they're deciding to play the piano at 14, kids started at six, you know, like, you know, of course. But knowing you belong is like, hey, I want to do this. I belong there because I want to do this. And I'm showing up. I'm showing up. So because I'm showing up, I belong, right? So when you can understand that, you have the self-esteem and the self-worth and the confidence to meet yourself where you are, not compare yourself to everybody else.
So that's interesting. So at first I want to acknowledge what Fran said, that she's never really tried to fit in. She's just been, and I like that. And I, the reason that I find what you say interesting is because I would have thought it would have worked more the opposite way, like that you had confidence in who you were and you, you know, believed in yourself and you liked who you were. And then it would be easy to feel that you belong somewhere and that you don't have to fit in. But you said it's the opposite.
Yeah, that's how I look at it. I mean, that's what I teach, because belonging starts within your heart, knowing that you're good enough. It's not an external thing. It's like, you know, it's an internal thing. And it's like, you have to, I remember when I was doing stand-up comedy and there were nights I bombed and there were nights I crushed it. And you question things when you bomb, right? And you also when you're joining a new club for the first time and you're, you know, everyone's assessing you out, everybody's judging you and sizing you up and stuff like that. And you get a lot of bit of self-doubt, you know, all that stuff. But when you know that you belong, you just get the confidence to just show up as your authentic self. You get the confidence within yourself to bomb or do good. It doesn't matter. It's like, I'm here, I'm showing up, and I belong here, and I'm gonna give my performance, right? And the thing is, you're always gonna learn, you're always gonna grow, right? You're not always gonna have good days, you're not always gonna have good performances. Adults listening to the show, you're not gonna have the best presentation at work all the time, right? If you're a lawyer, you might not win every case. There are moments where you're not gonna be good, and that self-confidence goes down. Right. But when you know that you belong, again, you show up as your authentic self, you know that that's enough. And then you assess, you're able to see yourself. And this is where self-assessment comes on why it didn't go so well. What happened there? Okay. Instead of getting down on yourself again, getting down on yourself does nothing for you, but put you in victim mode. That's it. That's all it does for you. But when you can see yourself and go, oh, I didn't do so great there. Oh, I lost them there. Oh, they booed me there. Why? Why didn't that work? Right. What can I do better next time? You then can take yourself out of that emotional standpoint and look at it from an objective standpoint. And that is where belonging comes in, because belonging gives the confidence to be able to do that.
That is so eye-opening for me. I really appreciate that perspective, because like I said, my perspective was the opposite. And I don't know if one way is definitive over the other way. I think they could maybe go both ways. I know for me personally, the way that I teach it is the way that it happened for me. Because I didn't believe in myself. I didn't think I was good enough. I didn't think me was what people wanted. So I was a chameleon. I was, you know, like, okay, in this situation, you know, I'm this for that group. And in this situation, I'm this for that group. Now, that was through childhood. As an adult, I started to go, why do I care what everybody else thinks? Why am I always trying to fit in? And then I started to, you know, really go, oh, okay. Hey, there's this guy called Jesus, and he died a horrific death on a cross for me because I'm worth it. That I'm worthy. I'm a good, my enough is enough. And just what you said, you know, like when you get up and you have a bad day, we all have bad days. And to give myself and be able to give myself the grace to have a bad day and to really know and be okay with not being perfect. For some reason, I always felt like I had to be perfect as a child. I don't know why, but that's just how I always felt. And that's an impossible standard to meet. And so I was always failing. And so I always felt like a failure. And, it, you know, and to just, you know, is there something that parents can do that they could be intentional with in order to help build that in their child, that that child's enough is enough?
There are many things that you can do as a parent to help build your kids' self-worth and self-confidence. First of all, just the analogy alone of the belonging and fitting in, you know, being on the team and stuff really makes an impact. Like they really can visualize that. They can understand that. And them just knowing that they belong and understanding what belonging is. They need to understand what belonging is. Like we have to stop teaching them that belonging and fitting in are the exact same things. Mm-hmm. That's number one. I say that's the number one thing is it's get them to really understand the message of belonging and teach them how to speak positively to themselves. Teach them to point out the positives. We are so used to pointing out the negatives within ourselves, right? You look in the mirror and you're like, oh my God, what's that wrinkle going on over there? Right. But you know, oh my God, what's that pimple? You know, we're so used to pointing out that negative part, right? It's one of the reasons why I don't wear makeup. I don't wear makeup at all. Mm-hmm. I don't either. Because you're just putting a mask on. You're just hiding the flaws and blemishes. And I remember, and the reason why is when I was young, I think my cousin was around 11 or 12 and we're 5 years apart. And I remember we had like some family party and she didn't show up. And my dad is like such a family guy and calls her up. It's like, what happened? Why didn't you show up to the family party? Mm-hmm. And she was like, Uncle Jerry, I didn't look good enough. I didn't have time to put my makeup on. I mean, that was like family party. Who cares? Right? But that's how insecure she was. That's how much like she needed makeup on before she even stepped out the door. Right. And I remember being in my 20s, like wearing makeup and then not wearing makeup and really seeing a difference, see a huge difference. And I was like, this is unhealthy. this is not good for my psyche to like literally see the the no blemish to the blemish and all that stuff. So that's when I decided to make the choice. Like, it's time to not put that on. So it's really like also observing your child to teach the, and like recognize like, oh my God, my child speaks negatively to themselves. Like, is it because they're seeing me do it? Like, what, how am I modeling myself? Right. Mm-hmm. And are they seeing me in the mirror saying positive things? Are they, when I am around, are they seeing me pointing out the negatives that they done? Like, maybe they're supposed to clean their room and they clean their room to the way that they see fit. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm pointing out all the things they didn't do right. Right. Because that's what they're going to do then is start pointing out all the things that they didn't do right. How am I? You know, that's another thing. It's like, yeah, we want to teach our children, but we also need to teach ourselves. We also need to observe ourselves and look at ourselves. You are the model. They're watching you. So if you're the one that's educating them on eating healthy, but you don't eat healthy, if you're the one that's telling them they need to be, you know, going to the gym and doing all this other stuff, or, you know, and you don't do any of that, like, mm-hmm. it's like, why am I going to, they're modeling your actions, right? So who are you? Right. And are you the best model for them? Right. And you need to be able to do that. And another thing that you need to do that you don't need to do anything, by the way, I shouldn't say that you need to do, you know, is one of the things that I know that works. And I have a hard time with this with my nephew. He's 3, love of my life. You know, I have an impact on him and I'm with him. And I want to protect him. Gosh, do I want to protect him so much if someone like pushes him down or, you know, says something, I want to jump in. But I know one of the best things I can do is just let him figure it out. And when I come back, when he comes back, we talk about it. We give each other, I give him the tools he needs mm-hmm. to be able to stick up for himself. To be able to, you know, and there's a line, because if things do get out of control, parents need to go to the school. Parents need to step in, right? Because of everything that happens. But what I'm saying, surface level, little tiffs going on, you'll need to step in. You need to watch them. But what you need to do is give them the tools to be able to handle themselves, right? And not be so down on themselves. And all that starts with belonging, positive reinforcement, you know, being the best model, talking good about themselves. My nephew has a song about him. See, it's a song. I wrote it. I sing it to him. Well, I don't sing it. I don't sing, but I created my alien, Cosmo the Alien, from my children's book, created, like, sings a song. And it's the Lincoln song. And he says how great he is and how brave he is and how kind he is. And when I say, Lincoln, who's the best? And he's like, I am. He's 3. I don't say, no, we got to make ourselves small. No, everybody's the best. No, I want him to be able to think, say positive things to himself. And then obviously as he gets older, you know, there's a difference between arrogance and, you know, and neuroticism and all that other stuff. But when he's young, we need to be able to say, oh, I'm so good at this. Oh, I did so good on this test. Look at me getting an A. Oh my God, I did so good. I hit that home run. Stop making our kids small by saying, hey, let's not cheer ourselves on. Hey, let's talk about everybody else. You know, little things like that, like diminish children's self-esteem without you realizing it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think too, I am sensitive to, you know, if we're going to be that way, do you recommend that it's in private, or do you recommend that it's in public more? Or, you know, like if they hit the home run, like, you know, do you want them running around going, yeah, I'm the best. You didn't hit a home run. You're not as good as me.
Well, there's a difference. Like that's a different form of, that's arrogance. We're not teaching arrogance, but they're like, oh my God, I hit a home run. I did a great job. What's wrong with that? Right. I did a great job. You're acknowledging you and what you did. You're not comparing yourself. By you saying I'm the best, well, you're comparing yourself to everybody else. But instead, and the thing is, like, we also want to praise the effort, not the result. You know, that's another thing that we want to do as parents. It's like, you hit that home run because, remember when we went to the batting cages, you know, and we did this. My dad used to do that to me when I was younger because we used to practice a lot together. And when I did really well, it was like, you know, that happened because you practice so much. Like, you know, you I remember I couldn't do the shuttle run. And there was this award that I got. It's called Presidential or National. First place, second place, right? And mm-hmm. I got second place because I couldn't do the shuttle run. And my school gave me one more chance to, they said, hey, you're national, you're one away from presidential. If you can get this shuttle run, we'll give you one more chance tomorrow. And I said, okay. So I went home and I told my dad, and he took apart the living room. He moved all the furniture because we had the same floors as the gym, the wood floor. Mm-hmm. And he's like, wear exactly what you're going to wear tomorrow. And I put on whatever I was going to wear tomorrow. And we worked and we got that shuttle run down. And when I went in that gym the next day, I nailed it. But it was because we spent over an hour running up and down the living room for me to get that shuttle run score, right? And when I got it, it wasn't great job on presidential. It was about the effort. He goes, see what happened from yesterday? Like, your hard work made that result, right? And that's another thing that we want to do. We want to praise the effort, not the result. So when the kids do that, it's like, I did a great job because I put in the work, because I did the hard, you know, because I did all that. Right. And that's also going to carry them on, because then they're going to be better teammates too. Because, you know, when somebody else doesn't do well, they're going to naturally go and help them, because that's what my parents did for me. They naturally helped me when I didn't do good in a sport, because sports was a religion in my house. My dad would like practice with me. He'd go outside and do that. So when somebody on the team wasn't doing well, I would go extra and practice with them. And that was just being a good teammate is, you know.
Sorry about that.
No, you're fine. Yeah.
I normally have my phone muted, so I'm not really sure how that happened.
Yeah, but that's like one big thing where it's like, yeah, we want the kids to say, great job. I did a good job. You know, I helped out the team. But it's not like I'm better than you. You know, there's a line on arrogance and you know, and being into yourself.
Yeah. So a lot of what I heard you talk about, it was being very intentional about your parenting. I think a lot of parents, we're so busy, we're so tired, we're, you know, we don't have the wherewithal sometimes, if not most times, to be intentional. And we just somehow think it's our kids are going to pick it up. And I love that you talked about the modeling, because they are correct. Kids are going to pick it up based on what's being modeled for them.
Right.
And so, yeah, if you're modeling opposite behaviors than what you want your children to have, they're not going to pick up anything different if you're not intentionally telling them different. And even if you are intentionally telling them different, but you're modeling something else, they're going to get mixed signals and they're really not going to know what to do. You know, the phrase actions speak louder than words, I think applies very much to what you just described.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, modeling is very important.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to give opportunity. Do you want me to pull up your website so that we can talk about your books, or do you just want to talk about your books and
whatever works? I have one book. It's You Really Truly Do Belong. My second book, You Really Truly Are Enough, is coming out this fall, which I'm excited about. Same character, Cosmo the alien. I like to keep the same character, mm-hmm. but this time it's going to teach us that we're pretty enough, good enough, smart enough, brave enough, strong enough, all around enough. But yeah, so that's my first book. I did the second book really for my nephew. If it wasn't for him, there wouldn't be a second book, but it's really for him to, I put him in the story. And it's also belonging and knowing that you're enough, I think, are two very important things for children. And then, you know, it talks about me. I got to put my nonprofit on there as well. I haven't yet, but the nonprofit does author visits. That's the whole point. So I can do author visits alone. And then for those schools that don't afford it, you know, we go with the author visits. And then there's Cosmo the Alien, which teaches kids that they're enough. You go on the YouTube and we have belonging songs, being enough songs. We have animal learning. And then we also just started on Spotify. We have a new album for kids that struggle with speech. And we do auditory bombardment. So that album is a speech album. And then it has the P song, the W song, you know, the CH song. And it's just these songs that help kids to, you know, with speech and stuff like that. And I worked with a speech therapist to, you know, get these songs to, you know, do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. So I know that you have two websites, so I'm going to see if I can. It's probably not going to let me to just jump over to the other one. I'm probably have to go. So now we have a blank blue screen for a second here. All right. So
yeah, the first is my nonprofit. Yeah.
Yeah. The first website, let me put up the website address, was Gina
Cazaza. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Which is GINACASAZZA.com. And right now we are empowerlitnonprofit.org. So this is where, if they want you to come to their school, this is where they would go.
That's for the nonprofit. So if your school doesn't have funding or anything like that, or if you wanted to sponsor a school or anything like that, that's where you go. Also, speaking of, you know, on my website, GinaCazaza.com, you could always contact me. We do have a Substack. EmpowerLit has a Substack, which I got to put on this website. We're just brand new, the nonprofit, so I'm learning. Okay. But we do have this, and it's ranked number 41 in parenting on Substack, the Substack article. And I do a bunch of articles on how to build belonging in your children, how to build resilience. I bring in parents that are part of I Have a Special Forces podcast. A couple of the parents from my Special Forces podcast go on there and talk about how they're doing building resilience in kids. One of the recent ones we did was how to find your children's passion, how to develop and understand and find your children's passion at a young age. So, you know, the Substack has so many goodies for that. It's completely free. It's a great news thing. And it's, you just go on to Substack and then type in EmpowerLit, and there we are.
Nice. Very cool. And I'm just reading this testimonial here from Catherine Rua. And just this, our student population is very diverse and our school qualifies as a Title I site. Many of our students have been given limited narratives about what they are capable of or how their lives will turn out. After Ms. Casaza's visit, many of our students, fourth and fifth grade specifically, shared with me how encouraged they were to learn that no matter what their reading or writing skill level, they could one day become authors. I think that truly just exemplifies Hashtag no limits.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm so thankful for that. And for that example that you are out there sharing with students, because they have to believe in themselves. I had my guest last week is from buildmystory.com, and they talked about that kids can be the heroes of their own stories.
I say that at every speaking event. I say you are the hero of your story, you know, be that hero. And that's right. Not a victim. It's a victor. Be the hero of your story. And that hero is going to have hardships. That hero is going to go through obstacles. And I talk about how we have our team, our tribe of people that are going to help us. But then I also talk about sometimes we're going to feel like we're in it alone, and you have to be able to pull yourself out of it. And that's through positive thinking and all that stuff. It's so, so important. And again, they model it from you, parents. They model it from you.
Yeah. Yeah. I just thought that blended so well, my last week's guest and what you were doing. Cause yeah, absolutely. I thought that saying fit perfectly for both of you. And I found that so empowering and so exciting for kids to know and believe that they are the hero of their own story.
100%.
And so I appreciate you so very much for doing that. Now we just have a few minutes left, and I just want to give you opportunity. I feel like we've covered a lot. However, if there is something that you were really hoping to talk about or say today.
I think we crushed it. I think you did a great job. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, no, I think it was a very good session as our episode as well. And so I very much appreciate you and your time today. I know that you came from a speaking engagement to be on here. And so, you know, I kind of caught you in between trying to get a little bit of lunch. No, so I'm going to let you go.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. No, it was a pleasure being here. So I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. So everybody, just make sure that you are liking and subscribing so that you don't miss any of my amazing guests like Gina and like buildmystory.com last week. And make sure that you remember, we know who we are, but not who we will be, and that you can be the hero of your own story. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.